Good evening, everybody. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters. My name is Veronica Entwistle. And as you know, a paradigm shifter is somebody who's shaking, rattling, and rolling the collective of our planet at this time. And we have somebody here who's very good at that, Steve Berriman, and his, alter ego, or one of his many multiple personalities, is Swami Beyondananda, who wants to be running for president. And if he, what's time for politics as unusual with an uncommentator and political guru, Swami Beyondananda. Welcome to the show, Steve and Swami.
Oh, thank you so much. And the Swami is hovering above. He's on his magic carpet. So literally, he is on the air.
And he's doing his seven steps.
He's on the air right now.
Oh, good.
Right on top of the air. So, yes, Swami will be here. And you know, interestingly, the book is called Swami for President, and we intentionally did that because essentially we the people need to create a new precedent, and that new precedent is evolving to the understanding that we are the leaders that we're waiting for. Swami calls it shifting out of being children of God and becoming finally adults of God.
Ah, this is good.
Yeah, and being responsible and so on, and having our eyes open, and understanding that in this political conversation, you know, in its higher octaves, we do need progressivism and we do need conservatism, and we need to ask the questions, how do we wish to progress, and what do we want to conserve?
Well, you know what's interesting to me is, and I read an article that you had written as Steve called the Cellular Economy.
Ah, yes.
And that is saying essentially the same thing as what you're saying in another way. Do you want to talk about that, your brilliant concept about humanity is like a human body?
Well, you know, for the last 2.5 years, I've been working with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, who's written a book called The Biology of Belief. And Bruce and I are working on, we're almost done with a book called Spontaneous Evolution, Our Positive Future, and How to Get There from Here. And in this, in fact, the CD series based on the book is already out, and that's been produced by Sounds True.
What's it called?
It's called Spontaneous Evolution, Our Positive Future and How to Get There from Here. And it's available on wakeuplaughing.com, which is my website, wakeuplaughing.com. And Bruce is a brilliant cellular biologist who brings his expertise in cellular and evolutionary biology to the conversation that we're facing now, which is we're looking at essentially we human beings are at the point where we can't really keep doing what we've been doing and expect to survive. And whether you see this from the the point of view of the scientists who say, we're in the sixth great extinction, or if we see it from the, the fundamentalist Christians who say that we're about to be swept up in the rapture, or if we take it as the 2012 people saying that there's going to be some great transformation. And by the way, I need to tell you, Swami Beyondananda is working on a new book. It's called 2012, The Secrets Revealed.
Wow.
Yeah, it's going to be out in 2013.
Anyway. I like Swami's little word here. He says that his big prediction with the new bailout plan, the U.S. dollar will be worth slightly less than a dollar in monopoly money.
Yes, yes. We actually have that right now. And it's actually very, it reflects energy medicine because we now have homeopathic currency that there is actually a small trace of real value in the dollar. Hard to measure, but we know it's there. But anyway, let me get back to that.
I am laughing, but I know it's true.
Yeah, the original question you asked, I am going to get back to that. And so in working with Bruce Lipton, one of the things that we understand now about evolution is that evolution always involves two things. One is an expansion of community. The other is an expansion of awareness. And if we go back about 700 million years, there was just single cells. Life consisted of single cell organisms. And at some point, it became tough for them to survive. As Swami says, well, I was a single cell. I didn't make a single cell. It was tough going there. And so at some point, when population of cells reached a particular density in a particular environment, a new order was required, and all of a sudden these cells began to cluster together and communicate and become multi-cell organisms. Now, you and I are multi-cell organisms consisting of up to 50 trillion cellular citizens. In the community underneath our skin, we have universal health care, full employment, no cell left behind. We have an extraordinary system where the organs actually cooperate instead of trying to kill one another. And you know, you never hear about the liver invading the pancreas, demanding the islets of Langerhans. Right? You never hear about that.
No.
So essentially, our cells may be smarter than we are, but what really is smart is nature. Nature is smart. And we are about to realize that the next phase of human evolution, because evolution always involves increased awareness and increased community, is our awareness that we are a community, that we are each and all cells in the body called humanity. Now, this reflects, now interestingly, science is coming to discover this, and yet it reflects the ancient wisdom that is at the foundation of just about every religion or ethical system, some version of the golden rule, some version of we're all in this together. So once a critical mass of human beings understand we're all in this together is the operating principle prescribed both by science and by our spiritual paths. With this critical mass, all of a sudden, we shift from being the collapsing, falling apart, disintegrating caterpillar, and we become the butterfly organism. In the cocoon, as this metamorphosis takes place, the caterpillar cells begin to decompose and deconstruct. And these new cells, which are actually called imaginal cells, begin to pop up. And these are the new cells that are becoming the butterfly, and these cells begin to communicate with one another. They begin to connect up. And at some point, the new organism is the butterfly. It's no longer a caterpillar, it's a butterfly. Now, what's also very interesting is that both the caterpillar and the butterfly have the exact same DNA. Genetically, they're the same organism. What's different is that they are receiving a different signal from the environment. So the signal that we need to understand and receive is the belief and understanding that we're all in this together is a superior, more efficient, more effective, more loving, and more evolved operating system than the every cell for himself system that we're in right now. And that's the biggest distinction in this campaign. You know, Obama has actually used the words, we're all in this together. Mm-hmm. He's actually used that to describe his worldview and operating system. And if we look at the other side, you know, basically, they're just afraid that something of theirs might get taken away.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very short-sighted view because what's interesting is that there have been attempts in the past to impose from the top down some good for everybody social structure. And we've seen how the profound failures of the communist and social and totalitarian socialist systems imposed from the top down, they simply don't work. What we are now in the process of is having this realization from the ground up so that individuals are awakening to this new worldview and beginning to choose what they do and how they do it to reflect this understanding of we're all cells in the body of humanity.
And I'm just thinking as you say that, well, part of it, okay, the DNA of the caterpillar and the butterfly are the same, right?
Yeah.
It's just we're listening to different beliefs at that time to create from one to the other, right?
There's a different field. You know, one of the beliefs of scientific materialism, which is our current belief system paradigm, is that if it can't be seen, it doesn't exist. Only matter matters. And yet, this has been disproved. It's been disproved by quantum physics, for one thing, which indicates that when you get to the bottom, to the subatomic level, where we're expecting to find some kind of God particle, what we find instead is energy. We find non-material forces. We find energetic forces. A simple experiment, which you probably did when you were in junior high school, is you spill some iron filings on a piece of paper and they fall in some kind of random pattern.
Oh, yes, I remember that.
And then, of course, if you put a magnet underneath it, lo and behold, the iron filings arrange themselves into the pattern that looks like a magnet. Now, if you don't know about magnetism and you don't see the magnet underneath it and you're totally unfamiliar with the concept, you go, my God, these are incredibly intelligent iron filings to figure out how to stand in that kind of formation like
right.
that. Well, we don't see the field. And as we are coming to realize in many, many different domains, in fact, Einstein said this about 100 years ago. He said that the field is the sole governing agent over the particle. And another way of putting that is that spirit, the invisible that weaves this entire existence together, is what determines the fate of matter. Matter follows spirit. Visible follows invisible.
Well, let me see now. Okay, so we have an election coming up. So what can people use of that in order to vote better? My question is, we should be running a whole team of people for president or precedent.
Well, yeah, and I think
one or two people.
I think that there's a long-term and a short-term understanding. The long-term understanding is that this evolutionary process that we're talking about, even though we're calling it spontaneous evolution, can take decades.
Mm-hmm.
However, the instant thing that we can do right now is we can change the tenor of the field and we can change the direction that we're going in. And, I'm supporting Obama's campaign primarily because I see him as a candidate of political climate change. That in political climate change, what I'm seeing is a move toward functionality, a move toward working together, a move toward solving problems rather than throwing accusations at one another. And if you've seen how the tenor of the campaign has been, the only thing that the McCain and Palin campaign can offer is insults, epithets, criticisms, lies, distortions, and manipulations. That's the only tools they have left in their toolkit.
But the only thing is, I can remember some of the Obama, Hillary Clinton times being like that as well.
Well, I think that the
that bothered me.
What bothered you about that?
That they were also hurling complaints and judgments at each other. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Yeah, that was. I thought that was really.
I think once again, though, when you really looked at the two candidates and you looked at what they were talking about, and this is why I supported Obama over Hillary,
mm-hmm.
there were two distinctions. And again, these are energetic distinctions. You know, I think that maybe in terms of policy, their policies might have been fairly similar.
Mm-hmm.
But there were two energetic distinctions. First energetic distinction, very important. Obama's talking about we. Hillary's talking about me. I am, I do. And the understanding that we're all cells in the body of humanity, There is an understanding and appreciation that collectively we have power. And this collective power is not something that's imposed from the top down, but it's something that we voluntarily combine in order to realize. And if you really look at if you go back and you look at the campaign focus and statements, the focus of the Obama campaign was we're going to bring people together to create the most functional administration that we possibly can. We're going to actually defy ideology and move across the lines. And Hillary's thing was, I will fight for you.
Mm.
You know, And, I mean, there's certain times when you want people to fight for you, and I think that Obama has done a very good job of standing up for himself in an abusive campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that one of the problems when people are used to sound bites is that it's very easy for any campaign to fall into these ridiculous sound bites. And then, of course, the other thing about this campaign is that the third, fourth, and fifth party candidates were completely excluded when they could have had a tremendous amount to say about what we should be doing.
So who are they?
Well, Ralph Nader,
mm-hmm.
Bob Barr, the Libertarian candidate, Cynthia McKinney, the Green Party candidate, to name three, Chuck Baldwin, the Reverend Chuck Baldwin, who's the one that Ron Paul threw his support behind, who's a very fundamentalist Christian, but has been attuned to the abuses of the Bush administration and spoke out against them for the last 5, 6, 7, or 8 years.
So they could have stirred up people's thinking so that instead of it being a fear-driven vote.
Yeah, and I think that one of the most heartening things that's on the horizon is coming up in February, commemorating the 200th birth of Abraham, anniversary of Abraham Lincoln's birth. There is a group called the Transpartisan Alliance that's putting together a citizen summit in Denver, Colorado, and the idea is to bring together 1,500 citizens, roughly divided into three categories of 500 each. Democrats, Republicans, and Independents. And the idea behind
what
there
a great thing.
Is to bring, yes, it was in my, if you want to learn more about that, you can go to the Transpartisan Alliance. You can contact me at info@wakeuplaughing.com, and I'll send you my official endorsement of this event. I'm happy to say that I'm working with Joseph McCormick, the organizer of this event. And I'm very heartened by it because we have been, you know, the old divide and conquer. We, the people, have been divided into the red tribe Republicans and the blue tribe Democrats. And we spend so much of our energy arguing about whether it's more wrong to kill the born or the unborn. And meanwhile, plenty of born are being killed and the bill is being sent to the not yet born.
Oh, boy.
And so the
work of... Evolution says we don't kill for this sort of thing. We evolve.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And again, if you think about it, there was a very interesting moment in the history of our country before our country got started. It was on July 4th, but it was July 4th, 1751. And on July 4th, 1751, Benjamin Franklin was at a meeting. He was at a speech that was being given by Canossatego, who was a chief of Iroquois nations.
Hmm.
And Canossatego was very articulate, and he gave a demonstration. He took an arrow, and he snapped the arrow in two, and then he had 12 arrows that were all lashed together. And at that time, there were 12 colonies. And he invited the strongest individuals up in that audience, and nobody could break these 12 arrows that were bound. And he essentially was talking about the Iroquois nation, but he also was giving us the model for the United States. Because if you think about it, what if we didn't become a confederation of states? We would each have our private army. You know, New Jersey and New York would be getting into border skirmishes, et cetera, et cetera. Who knows what wars could have ensued? And we can owe our great prosperity to the fact that internally in this country, we did not spend our resource fighting each other. Same thing happened in the 1800s when Germany was unified. All of a sudden, all of these city-states had a tremendous wave of prosperity because they weren't using their wealth to fight one another. They were building something together in cooperation. So
if
we begin to look at that as a worldview, then we see how much more efficient it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and these days it's amazing how you cannot be in a room that's mixed Republican and Democrat without it being just horrendous.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when there used to be civility in this, and so part of what we're trying to restore in our transpartisan alliance and in this citizen summit that's coming up is that civility and being willing to listen respectfully. One of the problems we have, and I have to say that the right-wingers are much worse about this, is that they somehow have this stereotyped idea of what a liberal is. And so if they peg you as a liberal, they have decided that you believe this and this and this and this and this and this and this, and there's nothing they can do to be dissuaded from this. And it's pure brainwashing. Now, of course, on the other side, on the progressive side, you know, there's plenty of fear and terror about religious fundamentalists, and there's a lot of projection that goes on there. So what happens is we each get our fed the kind of news that we want to get, and it confirms what we already suspect is true. And so consequently, before we meet somebody, we already know too much about them. We are, and much of it is false. Much of it
is distorted.
Yeah,
that may or may not be even true at all.
Yeah.
Now, I've heard that there's a lot of big Republicans that have put their names behind Obama lately and their funds.
Well, that's exactly what's happened. There have been a number of Barry Goldwater's granddaughter and Eisenhower's granddaughter. We've had a former governor of Massachusetts, former governor of Minnesota. We've had people inside the McCain campaign, the big McCain consultant and supporter. We've had Christopher Buckley, the editor of the William F. Buckley's son, a writer for the right-wing National Review. We've had, of course, Colin Powell.
Mm-hmm.
And what this is saying is that it's not that these people want to, as of course the panic people are saying, they're Obama represents socialism and redistribution of the wealth. And of course, if you look at the last 8 years, the wealth has been redistributed already. You know, the trickle down theory. You know about that? Hardly anything ever trickles down. You know, they put the trick in the trickle down. A lot of these people recognize two things. Number one, they recognize that Obama is functional and that McCain is not. And the sign of McCain's poor judgment, of course, is picking Sarah Palin. And that's an indefensible, I think, you know, this year there were at least 24 major newspapers that went for George Bush in 2004 that are now supporting Obama. And all the editorials say pretty much the same thing. They say that, you know, we started out with great respect for John McCain, you know, for his experience, for his willingness to work across party lines. But the more we get to know him, the more we realize that he is unstable.
Mm-hmm.
And in picking Sarah Palin, who is clearly unqualified, I mean, the Salt Lake Times, you know, Republican Mormon newspaper, I mean, they basically said that she was so starkly unqualified that it was jaw-dropping, and that in and of itself should disqualify McCain. At the same time, the papers have been recognizing that Obama actually has a conservative personality.
Hmm.
If you look at him, he's deliberate. He weighs all sides. He does not get pulled off into these whacked out emotional arguments. He doesn't get thrown off center very much. And there's been a lot of stuff that could have thrown him off center.
But it's interesting when you use the word conservative, a part of me is going, I don't know what any of that means anymore, you know? He's grounded.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Well, I would say that if we look at the higher octave of let's say conservative and progressive, the higher octave of progressive is understanding that we're all in this together, and that life progresses forward through greater awareness, through greater learning, and through greater community. And you know, where the religious people, they say we're sinners. And actually, the word sin means to miss the mark.
Right.
So what we are mistake makers.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and that's the name of the game, isn't it?
And consequently, if we learn from our mistakes, we're not sinners, we're learners.
We're creators.
So, yeah, and creators. So the progressive thought is that we're learners and creators, and that the essential nature of human nature is love. The conservative point of view is much more toward the, we have to be guarded, we have to protect. And of course, there is a need to protect. In nature, there is growth and protection. In the cell is either in growth or it's in protection. If we look at the seed, the husk is the protection that protects the seed.
But I think also that if you go to the word liberal, liberals also protect themselves and protect each other. I mean, it's not a conservative or liberal statement there.
Well, I think that liberal has been the word that's been totally nuked. It's totally destroyed, and I don't even use it anymore because
the other word to me is
socialistic.
I'm from Canada, and when people jump up and down here and go, "Oh my gosh, it's going to be socialism," I'm going, "What?" Because it's usually referred to something where people are being either protected or looked after on a national level. I'm going, "Well, is that socialism, or is that just love?" You know.
Well, you know, I think that in looking at the body, what's the economic system of the body? And in the body, the coin of the realm is ATP, adenosine triphosphate. And this is how energy is transferred, how energy is stored, and how energy is spent. And when ATP is produced, it's essentially the payment that the cells receive, the energy that they get, in order to be able to do their job. So for a normal cell in the body, you know, it's basically the cell is doing its work, and in exchange for doing that work, it gets food deliveries every day. It gets its garbage picked up. It's on the Internet because it has communications for whatever it needs to know in order to do its job, etc. And
hold on a minute, Steve. We have a caller. Would you like to take callers?
Okay, let me finish this thought.
It'll be just
a second, and then I'll take the caller. So this ATP, this coin of the realm, the way that it's spent by the body is that every cell gets cared for. However, the cells that are doing the most for the entire system, those are the cells that get the most energy. And when ATP is stored, we can say that there's a bank account, but the way that bank account is spent, it's spent on what is the greatest benefit for the entire system. So it's not exactly socialism because it's not to each cell according to its need. Essentially, it's to each cell according to the body's need, and some cells get paid more because their jobs are more important. I'll take the caller.
Good afternoon. You're on the good evening. You're on the air talking with Steve Behrman and Swami Beyond Ananda.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thanks. How are you doing?
Great. Steve? Yeah, I'm enjoying the conversation. It reminds me a lot of when I first started getting into what he's talking about. I would listen to Rupert Sheldrake, and I read some of his books where it mentioned morphic resonance and how flocks of birds and school of fish. And the communication between, the unspoken communication between people, was happening. That's the first time I think I started to realize what he's talking about is this change in the field that's going on.
Good way to put it.
And I think that's what's happening right now, what you're talking about with the new election and all that, there's a definite change in the field, the way people are thinking on all across the board.
What do you see? What do you see? I'm curious. That clues you into there's a change in the field as a specific example. Anything that you can put your finger on?
Well, me personally, the people around me, maybe because of magnetic. When you talk about magnetism, just people around me see a shift. And that's the way they put it, a shift in consciousness going on. And by listening to BBS, I mean, everyone's talking about that shift in consciousness towards a more of a unity between humanity and the God source or spirituality. So it seems to me just by intuition and just watching people and how they interact with each other from when I was younger till now, these people seem to interact more on a community level. Even I know a lot of people in the news, they put out the fear-based type stuff, but what I'm looking at from my own perspective, I see more of a community coming together.
And a gentleness among younger people that I didn't used to see that very much. There's an understanding of how people feel and who they are.
Yeah, definitely. I think the whole idea that people talk about the crystal children coming through and all that, I see the younger kids they seem to be more in tune together than when I was a kid. It's hard to say, but that's kind of what I'm seeing, and maybe I'm biased, but that's kind of how I look at it.
Well, you know, what's interesting is that once you begin to imagine the possibility that, you know, maybe we're all cells in the body of humanity, maybe we're all connected, then all of a sudden these individual domains that we call politics and spirituality and economics and even our personal lives, they all become part of the same thing. And that's why, you know, in trying to deal with these economic problems that we have right now, it's not just the economy, because the decisions that we make in the economy are based on understandings, and these understandings also reverberate through the political world and their spiritual understandings. And another very exciting project is happening in, of all places, Reno, Nevada. And there's a group there called the Conscious Community Network, and they've been working for the past several years in a very quiet way to bring together very diverse elements of the community around what they call virtues and values. And these virtues and values transcend traditional religion, secular humanism, and so on. And the great promise of that is that the true heart and soul of humanity, which is a good heart and soul, can come through as we realize how we are manipulated into being separate. Once we realize how much we have in common, that we share so many of the same fundamental values, that we're able to isolate the, you know, 6, 7, or 8% of us who are sociopaths, that the Swami calls sociopathogens, and we're able to keep those forces in check without destroying healthy tissue. So if we looked at the 9/11 attacks, for example, as, you know, there's a group of sociopathogens that need to be isolated, rather than over-concluding and deciding that we're enemies with the entire Muslim world, we would be in a different situation now.
Definitely.
And what locale? Where are you living?
Portland, Oregon.
Okay, good. Well, good. You're in Tom Hartman country then.
Yeah, well, I just moved down here, so I'm just originally from Seattle. It's not too far, I'm not too aware of what's going on politically here. So, but I know it's a lot more. I mean, I guess you could say it's liberal, more liberal than. I guess the whole Northwest is kind of, in a way, liberal.
But
I've always been on the West Coast.
What you guys are talking about, too, though, I just keep feeling it is so outside of any of the rules of what's democratic or Republican or liberal or conservative. It's just really excitingly morphing way beyond those, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I've always been more for I'd like to see a third party. I mean, or not, I don't even know if parties mean anything, but I just like to see something different. That's where I'm coming from. I don't know enough about politics. I just it seems to me like a group, like what you were talking about earlier, maybe a group of individuals working together as opposed to a president. But I think way in the future, maybe there's going to be more of that coming together as things kind of work together.
You know, I heard years and years ago that consciousness would rise through everyone, whether they're military leaders or, you know, it wouldn't matter, that consciousness will rise. And it seems to me that that's a statement that has a lot to do with what we're talking about as well.
I think it's happening in every institution and society, and that includes the military and the people that I know who've been in the military, who are in the military right now. There's a very significant thing that happened right on the eve of the 2006 election, and that was all four of the military papers came out with an editorial calling for the resignation of Donald Rumsfeld. Now, if you think about that level of quote-unquote insubordination in wartime. And of course, the Democrats won a slight margin and were able to counterbalance the rather monolithic power of the neocon Republicans.
Right.
But to read a little bit deeper into that message, essentially the military sent a message to the Bush administration saying, if you try any funny stuff, we're not going to be with you. And consequently, there are all of these reports and predictions of we're going to bomb Iran, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And I believe a number of those plans were prevented and thwarted by people in the military who were not willing to see that happen.
That's wonderful news, yeah. Isn't it?
And I believe that. I believe that very strongly. So in every domain, there are people who have awareness, consciousness, honor, et cetera, and this is true also in the corporate domain.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that corporations are not really run by people. They're run by a machine that is self-perpetuating. And since we've given our destiny over to these entities that have no conscience and whose only mission, or whose only avowed mission, is to make money, we have created, or we have allowed, let's say, a system to take place where the rule of gold overrules the golden rule. And part of people like ourselves communicating with others who perhaps have different political viewpoints and yet finding the common ground, we'll find it in the common ground. You know, nobody wants to live under a fascist regime.
No.
Nobody wants to have, I personally have nothing against criminals. You know, I used to love to watch, The Sopranos. I just don't want them running things.
Gee, that'd be interesting, yeah.
You know, so I think that's really one of the most dangerous things that can happen in this country is for people to begin to communicate sincerely and listen respectfully across political party lines. Because we'll find that we have so much more in common, and that will be dangerous to the political parties. I think they're obsolete.
So we're talking about a rising consciousness in the grassroots, all throughout. Actually, it's throughout the world, isn't it? It's not just here.
Yeah, I don't know if you're familiar with the work of Paul Ray. He's written, he and his wife Sherry Anderson wrote a book called The Cultural Creatives, which describes the demographic that we're talking about, this growing awareness. When he first wrote the book about 10 or 12 years ago, he identified this group and he said that there were about 50 million adult Americans that fit this demographic, about 25% of our population. Well, today, or not just today, but I guess a few months ago when I spoke with him, he said that now it's 70%.
I'm sorry,
70 million. I'm sorry, 70 million people, more than 30%.
Wow.
And in Europe, that demographic is now at about 35%.
Hmm.
So now, 51% then.
In 1946, this demographic wasn't even on the radar, didn't even exist.
So it's kind of that revolution, which is people becoming wiser and realizing they're empowered enough to really say something and be something. It's more be something than say something.
Yeah, and this, I thank you for making that distinction, because, when I first started, my first job was teaching in Washington, D.C. at a very interesting time, and I got involved with a lot of interesting folks, and there was a guy that I met in those days who was a world-renowned expert on communal living, but unfortunately, nobody could live with him. and we've seen that time and time again, where people have these lofty ideals, but they can't ground it in the real deal.
Mm.
And this is a time because if we look at the real situation in terms of our human footprint and our relationship with the planet, that BS doesn't work anymore. It simply doesn't. And we have to be able to. If somebody has a great idea, okay, does it work? Does it work? And if it doesn't work, how do we modify it to work or move on to the next idea?
Well, this might not be totally relevant, but I think it is. I'm an intuitive, and recently I've noticed when I meet people who are born again, they calmly accept me, whereas 10 years ago it was like, you know, you just didn't talk, right?
Interesting.
There's a movement there as well where people are trying to accept each other. I think it's quite strong and floating across all, as we said earlier, boundaries and barriers.
My wife Trudy is a teacher and practitioner of Psyche, psychological kinesiology, and it's a technique for doing reprogramming of your internal belief system.
Hmm.
And Rob Williams, who is the founder of Psyche, he was working with a corporation at one point, and many of the people were born again Christians, so they were a little bit reluctant about this. You know, is this the devil's work and all that? But what he found very interesting is that often he would muscle test them for congruency with their beliefs, and he'd get, you know, God loves me, doink, test weak, and they would test weak to all of these belief statements about their faith. And so when these belief statements were reinstalled in a way that they were congruent with their own beliefs, and they tested strong for these beliefs, they were less dogmatic.
Yeah, because dogmatism is often about fear, isn't it?
It's about fear, and it's about having to convince themselves of something that they're not totally convinced of.
And, you know, your caller, I loved your call, but I think maybe you could hang up and somebody else might call in.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
But you've been quite a contributor. Thank you so much.
Oh, that's been great. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was great. Isn't that interesting, eh? So it's when we're defending our position that we become really dogmatic.
Yeah, it's fear-based because, you know, if I didn't have my position, so it's kind of like this woman that I heard, and I couldn't quite believe it, so I had to really check, did I hear what I thought I heard? And somebody had presented her with some, you know, egregious perpetration that the Bush administration had committed. There was a lot of evidence for it. And the woman said, well, it might be true, but I don't believe it. You know, when you start to recognize the positive power of cognitive dissonance, you know, that that sometimes it's a good thing when we're in conflict, because that conflict is indicating that we're about to let go of a belief that is no longer true, doesn't serve us. And, you know, right now we're in the throes of the perhaps the worst economic crisis ever.
Mm-hmm.
Because essentially our system has been so strung out on the crack of debt that you cannot create enough debt to pay for the old debt.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be healed inside the context of the current system. And so something has to give. And
one of the things that my guides are teaching people right now a lot, and other people's are as well, is to release a lot of our identities. For example, if you think your success or failure depends upon your portfolio, for example, or your ability to get along in the world, that's a good identity to release right now so that the creativity can flow through or the divinity can flow through.
Well, I think you're right. That's what life is asking of us right now. And every, you know, it sounds like a spiritual cliche, but it's true. Every time we let go of some of these things that we hold so dear that are really less than what we're capable of, we allow ourselves to experience the next level up.
Yeah, we're not empowered. We're not empowered till we let that go. Does Swami have anything to say?
Oh yeah, hold on. He's been so patient. Oh, he went to the bathroom.
Oh, he did.
Oh, right here. Oh,
well, now he's more comfortable.
But no, here he's coming back. He's coming back. And perhaps if you have a question for the Swami, he'll have an answer for you.
Okay.
Hold on. Here he comes. Hello.
Hi, Swami.
Oh, if you have an answerable question, I have a questionable answer. Okay, what do you want to know?
Okay, how would you recommend that people deal with these coming times where we're going to have to be more creative or, you know, the economic reality we had is kind of breaking apart?
Well, you know what, I always recommend laughter because, to paraphrase those fabulous furry freak brothers, laughter will get you through times of no money better than money will get you through times of no laughter. And you know what? This is an amazing tool that we've been given, this tool of laughter, because it is like having a God's eye point of view. because the, you know, the creator is watching the Comedy Channel and we're what's on. Now, sometimes we forget to laugh. And if you've ever gone a day without laughing, we call that irregular hilarity. So I recommend a good laughative every day. Find something to laugh about and don't get too serious. Otherwise, you might end up with humoroids.
Now, you recommend a daily laugh?
Daily laughative. Find something to laugh about every day. And you know, even in the great economic crisis, there was a wonderful piece that circulated that talked about how the banks in Japan were dealing with the crisis.
How was that?
Well, the Origami Bank, they folded.
Elegant.
Yeah, the Karaoke Bank, that could be had for a song. And the Bonsai Bank, they had to cut a few branches. So in the middle of all of this distress, if we find something to laugh at, we become bigger than our problem. And that's very important. You know, you maybe heard the story about Norman Cousins. He was diagnosed with a life-threatening
yes.
illness. He
yes.
checked into a hotel room.
Mm-hmm.
He watched Marx Brothers movies and he got well. And when he cured himself, which he did,
mm-hmm.
the medical establishment decided they are going to study the healing power of laughter. And that is kind of like, well, it works in practice, but does it work in theory? And they found that that when we laugh, it creates these hormones called endorphins. This is our natural painkiller. And laughing improves immune function because when we laugh, it causes the blood vessels to dilate better than having them die early. Anyone mind to dilate?
I think you ought to be there where we're going to vote at the polls, don't you think?
Well, you know, I think that this is the time where I do say that we do have to elect ourselves, that we have to actually evolve to become the citizens our founding fathers dreamed of. And, you know, we don't need a revolution. We already had one. Now we need an evolution. And the way we start an evolution, on November 4th, fire a bunch of big shots.
Run as a team for president.
Yeah, that's right. And no, that's right, because it's not something that one person can do. And as you're realizing, that first of all, we have to do this at a local level. That every locality has to, and this I'm serious about, that has to learn to become food and energy self-sufficient. Because if you have your own food and you produce your own energy, you cannot be dominated. You cannot be manipulated.
That's exactly true, isn't it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there are four elements to every economy, and only four elements. Now money, I'll tell you something. If you think money is worth something, try this experiment. Eat your money. Now, you may find it's high in fiber, but it's very, very low in caloric and nutritional value. And here's something. You want to hear something really amazing?
Yes.
A $100 bill has no more nutritional value than a dollar bill has.
What's it actually worth in the real, in the money base? You know, in the gold relationship to bills.
But you know what? It's not even gold. Let me tell you what it really is. The economy comes down to four things because we've gotten so far away from true value. That value is this. Value is the energy that comes from the sun. That is our infinite source of power. Value is the food we grow on the earth that springs like manna. Every season, we got food springing up. Economy is the love in our hearts because that is what magnifies goodness on the planet. And the more goodness we have, the fewer goods we need to feel good. Now think about this. This is loaves and fishes. Somebody walks into a room filled with love, and 100 or 1,000 or 10,000 people can leave that room with the same love. The love is not diminished, it's magnified. And the other quality is invention and imagination. So the love in our hearts, the imagination in our minds, that is what we use to magnify the food that we grow and the energy that we get from the sun, and that is economy. It is simple. There's no economy without value because economy is energy. That's all it is. It's how we get energy, how we store energy, how we ship energy, and how we use energy, and how we generate it and save it. That is all economy is. It's not about the money.
And while you're talking, I'm thinking it would be really wonderful to have a natural in our communities, just imagination circles. imagination circles to stimulate that and to stimulate the energy flow of each community.
Oh, that's a great idea. I call it television. Turn off your TV, television instead.
Gather your neighbors and imagine.
Yes. And, you know, that, of course, imagination is only the first part, and then we have to bring it into doing this.
Mm-hmm.
That's, we have to embody our imagination. You know, and listen, I have to tell you something. When I first started touring, one of the people who organized my show, she did an amazing thing. This is how she organized. This is how she gathered people for the show. Every day, she would sit for 20 minutes in deep meditation, and she would imagine a room full of people. And you know, it was an amazing thing. The day of the event, we had a room full of imaginary people.
You mean it didn't bring people to you that way?
Well, I think that that is why we are on the physical plane, so that we can actually move our bodies to physically manifest things.
Yes, somebody said to me, remember, God doesn't have any feet.
That's exactly right. and that so consequently, don't buy any shoes for God.
Well, Swami, your book, Swami for President, it's still available?
Still available, while supplies last.
Okay. And also, what else have you got going? I read a wonderful article by Steve and you, I think, on a New Paradigm Newswire, and you also have a CD set. Can you talk about that?
Well, yes. This is Steve back, and Steve Swami.
Hi, Steve. I love Swami.
Yeah, you know, I never actually get to see that guy, the Swami.
Aww.
We're never in the same place at the same time. There is a 5-CD set called Spontaneous Evolution, Our Positive Future, How to Get There from Here. It's with the very brilliant and enlightening Bruce Lipton and myself. And it's the new story of our evolutionary future as cells in the body of humanity. It talks about how stories happen, how stories impact our biology, how the old stories are obsolete, and how we can begin to, through telling our vision, through imagination, through communication, through our actions together, begin to bring this new story out. And it's available on my website, which is wakeuplaughing.com. I have a new website that's in the process of being launched. You can go there and find out more. It's called Department of Heartland Security.
That's great.
Yes.
The Department of Heartland Security, is it .com?
It's a .org right now. Okay. We own all the domains, but right now it's set up as .org. It's in our pre-launch stage. You can become a member for free.
Oh, boy.
And really, it is the... to counteract the state of emergency, it's a state of emergency. Emergency that we're all related. And our official launch date is January 11th because it's 111.
Ah, now tell me again what the name of the site is.
Department of Heartland Security.
All right, I've got it written down so I can Google it and participate.
Yes, and I really appreciate that. This was a very quick hour for me.
Well, it was a very quick hour for me, but it was rich and deep, and I thank you so much, and I'm sure a lot of the people at home are thanking you.
Thanks, Veronica. I really appreciate the conversation and the work that you're doing.
Thank you.
Shifting that paradigm, because as the Swami says, shift happens.
Got to help it along.
That's right.
Thank you so much for your time, and I really enjoyed you. Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you, and may the farce be with you.
And you too. And that was Steve Behrman and Swami Beyondananda. What a delightful hour. So get in touch with his website, wakeuplaughing.com, and Department of Heartland Security.org, which isn't up till January the 11th. This is Veronica Entwistle, and like you, I'm a paradigm shifter. We're making waves in the collective and really trying to help one another just wake up and see what powerful creatures we are. I think what an amazing thing to be a vibrational vehicle of light, and what happens when we put our vehicles together. Woo, I can hardly wait. We're doing it, aren't we? So happy Election Day. And I will be in touch. I'll see you Thursday night on Jackie's show, 8 o'clock on Thursday night for ET Healing. And email me, Veronica, at veronicaentwistle.com with your opinion, your suggestions, if you'd like a session with me. All of the above are 510-595-5564. This show is all about learning to love each other and helping each other, and we'll talk to you soon. Much love and many blessings.